I'm your host, Blake Templeton, and this is a Solomon Investor Podcast. I've got so much excitement in me right now because I've got Bridger Pennington with me. He's the founder of Black Bridge Holdings. It's an investment fund that's done over 315 deals in the last 2.5 years. And to best explain it, Black Bridge essentially is lending money to small businesses or entrepreneurs who are actually wanting to build a business. Additionally, he has spoke on stage in front of 10,000 people. He's got a podcast of his own that has over 12,000 downloads a month. And what's another exciting piece of it is that he is very similar to us in that he has a flag in the ground, an emotional conviction against the market, and that there's another way. There's another way to actually build wealth. And he's helping other individuals through another platform build investment funds and help other people just like you. So, Bridger, so glad to have you on the call. Welcome to the podcast.
Blake, thank you so much, man. Excited to be on. I love your guys' show. I love what you guys do. I've followed you guys for a while now, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
It's time to stop trusting the public markets and look to history's first trillionaire on how to build real, lasting wealth. Look, over the past 14 years, we've applied these exact principles in more than 300 plus transactions. Not one single investor has lost money. That trillionaire was King Solomon. We'll be sharing his wisdom on how to build wealth in a way that's translated for the 21st century investor. My name is Blake Templeton, and this is the Solomon Investor Podcast.
Let's just start at the very beginning. Tell me a little bit about how you got started and who is Bridger?
Yeah, so the bio, I kind of mentioned I run an investment, a small investment fund. We do short-term loans to entrepreneurs. And I was able to kind of my background story a little bit. I grew up in a very normal house, entrepreneur household. And we can dive into entrepreneurship in a minute if you want to as well. But so my dad was an entrepreneur. I knew he just started a business. I didn't really know what he did. And I got into college. I had this big dream. Like I set this goal. I wanted to be a millionaire, right? I was like, I'm going to do it. And I didn't want to do it just because I wanted to like buy a Ferrari or something. I thought it'd be cool to have money to like hire family members or pay off medical bills or to help people, you know, and maybe buy a Ferrari too. That'd be kind of cool. But so I set on this journey to start, you know, I thought being an entrepreneur is the fastest way to get there. I looked at all the routes of life, right? You could go work for a big company, you could be a doctor. And I thought entrepreneurship, the most people I see in the world that make a lot of money are entrepreneurs. So I'm going to do it. So I, in college, was on business try number 7 at the time. I've done landscaping. I've done Chinese tutoring business. I'd done essential oils. And these weren't like business ideas. These were like legit businesses, like, you know, set up, running, making money. And anyways, my dad eventually grabs me. My dad's my greatest mentor ever. I love my dad. And he goes, Bridger, you're kind of like a chicken with your head cut off. I want you to go meet with one of my partners, my business partners, and I want you to talk with him and see if he can help you out a little bit. And I said, okay. So we set up this meeting. I drive to this guy's house. I'd never been there before. And I pull up to these beautiful, first off, it's a gated community. I drive through the gate and I pull up this cul-de-sac, and it's just this gorgeous white home. And it almost encompasses the entire cul-de-sac. And I park my car and I'm like, double check my address. Like, is this the right spot? You know, like, holy, who's my dad's business partner? And we lived in an average house. Like, my dad drove a crappy car. Like, that was the life we lived, right? And I knock on this guy's door, these 18-foot, like, beautiful oak doors. And I kind of knock, and I'm worried a butler is going to like kick me out. Like, be gone, peasant, you know? And anyways, my dad's partner answers the door, Bridger, come on. And we sit down and we start to chat. And he goes, Bridger, I was just like you. I'd started multiple businesses and I finally figured out what I should do. And I was like, what? And he goes, well, I had a friend who did a lot of the finances and accounting for very wealthy people. And he had one client in particular that made 10 times more money than everybody else. He goes, what did he do? And he ran an investment fund. And so, and at the time my dad's partner was like, I didn't even know what an investment fund was. And, but he said he looked into it and he found out like all the wealthiest people in the planet, they all run funds or their kids, they try to get their kids into the fund world, private equity, hedge funds, venture capital, And there a lot of wealth is generated through that vehicle. So he said, I don't care how long it takes me. I'm going to figure out how to start a fund and get it launched. He goes, right now, me and your dad, we run a fund and we manage about $8 billion of real estate at the time. This is about, I don't know, 8 years ago. And I was like, $8 billion. And to put that into perspective, like Cardone Capital, right? Grant Cardone, they manage about $1.1 billion. So the time they were, and they were doing multifamily just like Cardone Capital, $8 billion at the time. Now they're up to about $20 billion under management. So huge, right? And I was like, what? And he goes, and so we started to chat. And I'm like, hey, teach me about funds. How can I learn this? And he goes, well, you should go talk to your dad. And I was like, no, my dad, he drives a crappy car. We live in a small house. Can you be my mentor? Like, I would love to be mentored by you. And he goes, actually, me and your dad make about the same amount of money. And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, me and your dad are about equal business partners. And so I said, thanks. I got in my car. I drove straight to my dad's house. I was like, dad, what the heck? Like, we've gone to dinner for 10 years. I can't even order a soda at dinner because it's too expensive. And you run this huge fund, right? And he kind of laughs. He goes, well, you know, he goes, I like to save and invest my money. And my partner likes to spend his money. And we just live different lifestyles and that's okay. But we run this real estate fund. And so he sat down and taught me how funds work, how they started them, how to raise money, the whole nine yards. We probably dive into that in this episode. So I was on a path of the Wall Street. So I learned about this and my dad taught me the traditional route into the fund world is you go work on Wall Street, you go work in investment banking or consulting at one of these big firms, you work 80 to 100 hours a week. You get an MBA, you know, you work, you get experience, and after about 10 years, you can maybe start your own fund. That's the traditional route, or you can go work for a big hedge fund. You'll be able to kind of work your way up. And so I did this. I was in school, I got good grades, I got a good internship, and I remember I got a six-figure offer to go work at this big firm in Silicon Valley. Had stock options, bonuses, the whole nine yards. And I kind of looked at it and said, this is the next decade of my life, right? I could go down this route. But I looked at my dad and his partners and some other fund managers that I knew, and they didn't do the Wall Street route. And I thought, I wonder if there's a different way to the same ending, the same point of running and starting my own fund. And so I actually had this idea that I went and found. I vetted with a previous company I'd worked at. I vetted it with the owners that we could lend money to some of their clients. They loved the idea. I went and met with my dad. We got the whole fund set up. We got it structured and stuff. I remember I had my fund set up and I was like, I'm going to do this. I turned down the six-figure offer. I'm like, I'm setting up my fund. We're doing this. But the problem with the fund is you need to raise money. And that's like the one thing you need for a fund is to raise money from investors. And so I had this great idea. I was like, aha, my dad is rich and likes to invest. He doesn't spend his money. He said he loved my fund idea. He'll be a perfect investor into my funds. And so I remember I went and met with my dad. We sat down on this, you know, late Sunday night. And I remember asking, I was, dad, you know, I kind of get my best pitch voice possible. Dad, how would you like to be my first investor in our funds? And he kind of laughed. He said, Bridger, if I invest in your funds, I will ruin the experience of you going out and raising money and capital on your own.
Sure.
And it was a big, tough love moment between me and my dad. And he kicked me out. He said, you got to go do this on your own. I can't help you any further. He's like, I'll give you mentorship. I'll give you advice, but I won't help. I won't give you money. And so I went out, hit the streets. I talked to everybody I knew and I was able to actually get enough money. I raised $49,000 for my first fund. Like probably one of the smallest funds ever, but it was enough to get started.
I love about your story, Bridger, is that you actually had this like median in the road and you actually could have gone the public market route. Mm-hmm. And the idea, you know, of a six-figure salary, they're going to give you a six-figure salary. They're going to give you the stock options. And that's what my listeners, you know, first off, we just kind of break your story apart a little bit. You know, what most don't understand who are listening outside of the podcast itself is, you know, a mutual fund itself average is like a 3.17% actual fee. And that's getting, you know, sent out out of their actual return. So you actually could have gone that route and been that guy mm-hmm. who takes, you know, essentially 30 or 40% of their return, you know, and puts it in your own pocket. But you went the private market route. And I'd love to just kind of break this down and ask some questions. So you teach individuals how to begin a fund. Your group's called the Wall Street Rebels. Why? Tell me how you landed on that name.
Yeah. So yeah, our stuff is called Investment Fund Secrets, and we are the Wall Street Rebels. What I found was I just had this idea of let's start a podcast. Let's just see if there's other people like us. Cause I understand the uniqueness of my situation. My dad runs this huge fund. I was able to run, none of us went to an Ivy League school. None of us went, you know, did these crazy things. My brother is a securities attorney and he works at a $300 million fund as their chief compliance officer, in-house legal. So we're like the perfect family, right? So we go to dinner and we talk about funds. Like all we talk about is private equity. The SEC changed this rule. Like it's a very unique family. And so we threw out a podcast just to see if other people were like us that were interested and didn't do the whole Wall Street or didn't do the Ivy League route. And we started to find a lot of people were in our same boat. And there was a whole group of people just alone on the internet looking and trying to find other people like us that had done this. So we started to bring these people together. And the one thing in common was we were all kind of the Wall Street Rebels, is we all hated, absolutely hated the finance bro culture of, and I think a lot of people maybe listening know these types of people. I call them the finance bros. These are the guys, you know, on the Wolf of Wall Street type of people. They have the slick back hair. They hang out, you know, in clubs and they live this lavish lifestyle and are kind of just jerks to everybody. And, I hate the stigma around finance is you're one of those finance guys or finance bros. You must be a jerk and so into yourself and so about money. And in reality, most people I know in finance that are good fund managers, like my dad, are very conservative, are very, they live within their means. They're good at managing money. That's why they have that job. And they're just really humble, good people like you, Blake. I know you personally and you're that same way. And so that's, we started to do that. And that's where we put our flag in the ground. It's like, we're the anti Wall Street bro route. Yeah. We're the people actually getting stuff done, actually launching and scaling funds and doing that. And that's kind of where we got that mantra from.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got a fund, you know, we operate funds as well. And for those who don't know, let's just break that down from define what an investment fund is.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Let's go back to the basics, right? What is a fund? So a fund in the most simplest terms is a pool of money, and investors will put money into that pool, and a fund manager or the general partner, that's what they're usually called, the general partner or the fund manager like me or you will manage that pool of money and can make investments on behalf of the investors in the fund. And when those investments make money, they take a split, the investors get a split, and the fund managers get a split. So these types of funds can be used for like anything. You brought up mutual funds, right? That's one type. I actually don't like mutual funds very much. But the funds we usually talk about are private equity, hedge funds, venture capital. So like a typical hedge fund, that pool of money goes and trades on public markets. A venture capital fund, same structure, investors put money, they manage it, but they invest into like Shark Tank, small entrepreneurs into these seed investments. A private equity fund will do late stage private companies. So they'll go in and buy like Sycamore Partners lined up an acquisition for Victoria's Secret. So they'll go buy Victoria's Secret, like companies like that, right? These bigger companies. I have friends who do funds. One friend, he does a fund. All they do is go buy funeral homes, mom and pop funeral homes. They group them together, and they found if they group them together, they can sell them on the public markets for a 2x multiple.
Sure.
I have another friend that does almond farm funds. I have a friend that goes out and he buys movie rights from writers on Wall Street and sells them to HBO or Netflix or all these streaming services. That's all their fund does. There's these little teeny niche funds, and it's been pretty fun to be in this world and have our community to see all this.
Oh, that's so good. Those who are listening, your takeaways are, you know, there's a new ecosystem. And, you know, as you guys know, we call it the private market. There's a public market and there's a private market. And so, you know, Bridger's talking about there's all these niche industries in the private market that are tangible, they're collateral, they're real. We would say the public market's abstract, it's finite, it's futile, it's volatile, it's emotional. And you know, so we're both advocates for the power of the private sector. Why do you think that the public, Bridger, doesn't really know much about that ecosystem? Why is the MO or the mentality they live by, is it the public market mentality to invest?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of reasons for that. And number one is a lot of funds are exclusive. So the biggest, some of the biggest funds in the world are, you have Bridgewater and Blackstone, right? Ray Dalio's funds. You have the big Blackstone funds with Steven Schwarzman. To invest in Ray Dalio's funds, you have to have a $5 billion net worth and minimum investments $100 million. So that's the, right? Those are some thresholds, right? My dad's funds, I believe minimum investments $1 million. Right, to get into those funds. And the SEC has different qualifications of investors. You have accredited investors. They have $1 million net worth, excluding their home. You have a qualified clients who have a $2 million net worth and qualified purchasers who have a $5 million net worth. For some funds, you have to be a qualified purchaser or have a $5 million net worth to even talk to them. So I think for the common, you know, common investor, sometimes these funds aren't even available to you because you have to have a certain net worth. And the SEC, the reason they do that, by the way, is to protect the little guy. They don't want fund managers like me to come in and sweet talk grandma, and grandma gives me her last $20,000 and I lose grandma's $20,000 and now grandma can't survive. Right, they believe if you have a certain net worth, you're sophisticated enough in the matters of finance that you can pick and choose what types of funds are best. So I think that's probably one of the biggest barriers. However, the SEC has loosened up some things recently. You have now crowdfunding stuff. You have different ways you can raise money. I know you guys do a lot of stuff like this where regular investors can get involved. And that's why I think just for so many years, it's been kind of exclusive. And now it's slowly starting to open up to general investors.
Yeah, great answer. And, you know, and obviously there is a public market tie of what we'd call those who control that market. There's lots of spider webs out of where everyone begins to learn about that market, whether it's through their 401k when they first started in their 20s, and now they're in their 50s, and that's just all they knew was just, you know, I'm in some kind of mutual fund. Obviously, what we'd maybe call propaganda. It's something that's created that market, and unfortunately, it's very unregulated. From a fee mindset, from a mindset of what's actually happening in the actual investment itself. Is it actually protected by anything? I mean, everything's very abstract. It's very volatile. It's all in what we call a centralized bathtub. There's no diversification in that world.
I'm very advocate for private. For instance, public markets, and you might have talked about this on your show, but with public markets this last year, they did an incredible study. They mapped the revenue of companies versus their stock price. Because you think the revenue of a company goes up, their stock price must go up, right? In the last 100 years of the stock market, in 2019 and 2020, it's been the least correlation ever of stock price and their revenue of the company. I think it's like a 5% correlation. You have guys like, you might have already mentioned this story, but Bill Ackman, I think you saw this right as coronavirus was coming. Okay, Bill Ackman, by the way, he runs a huge hedge fund on Wall Street. He, a very famous investor, gets on CNBC, and this is right as everyone was, you know, stirring about coronavirus. He gets on and says, all hell is about to break loose. My dad is going to die of cancer. I mean, not of COVID. He's like, this is going to be the worst thing we've ever seen in our markets, right? The next morning, markets tumble, right? The huge crash. You probably already talked about this on the show, the market conditions. Little did everyone know, Bill Ackman had a $26 million short on the market. So median, a short is when you make money when the market goes down. In 2 weeks, Bill Ackman turned $26 million into $1.7 billion. And so you see, and then we're now in a kangaroo market, which is wild, right? So you see this market, and it's just these fund managers are really playing around with a lot of metrics on the stock market. And when stock price and revenue don't even correlate, I've seen a lot of investors are fleeing the public markets to private funds and privately held companies that are in real estate or something just more stable than this kangaroo market we're in right now.
It's a great point. On your show, you talk a lot about volatility, and obviously on our show, we talk a lot about volatility, and obviously that volatility is in the public markets, and it's exactly what you're talking about. It's the rising of the values of the stock when production's in no way aligned. You know, I mean, Amazon's a good example. Everyone would see them as the company of companies. You're in the right place, the right time, you're killing it. But you look at their numbers, they have a gross revenue of $250 billion, but they only have a 5% profit margin. So it's only $12 billion. They don't pay a dividend. And if they paid a 2% dividend, they would actually lose money as a company because 2% paid out to everyone would be $13 billion. How is that more than your earnings? Because the value of the price is now over $1.6 trillion, but you've only made $12 billion. So it's completely astronomical. That would never happen in the private market. Clearly that never happened in the private market because we actually have rules and metrics that value something that showed the actual appraised value. And so you're right. 2019, 2020, it's literally just gone berserk. And it's to a point where it can never come back. And to that point, that's why we both leverage the power of real estate. So tell me more about the benefits. What are the benefits of the power of real estate?
Yeah. Real estate, and these are more of my dad's funds or real estate funds. My funds are debt funds. I do loans. We do some real estate stuff, but the power of real estate is it's concrete, right? It's not going anywhere. You have insurance on it. It can never go to zero, really. If it burns down, you still have insurance on it. And that's why, like my dad's funds, for instance, they really launched out of 2008, 2009. They had done some stuff before. They had some smaller funds. In 2009, they said, this is the best time ever to be in the real estate market. Let's buy up everything. They bought up everything they could. I think they raised over $1 billion and just went after it. And then they've grown since then. And they're feeling great for this next coming recession, whenever it's going to happen or what's going to happen with the real estate market. They're feeling great because they buy B class apartments. If you know, A class apartments are the highest, A, B, C, they kind of grade them. When the recession comes or whatever happens, there's a deflation. People from A class apartments miss their rent. They move to B class, right? And then B class moves to C class. So B class really and C class always have renters. And unless you're like in New York and people don't think it's patriotic to pay their rent, unless you're somewhere like that, most of the time people are paying rent still and doing well. And just real estate is such a hard asset. It's just been proven for centuries.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, we also do debt funds. And so, you know, guys, that's simply put, that would be like you saying, okay, I want to invest for us personally. I'm not sure exactly sure how you do yours. I'll let you explain in a second, but ours is a fixed rate of return. So it's a fixed rate of return. It's actually backed by the actual asset. So Bob, you come in, you invest, you know, $250,000, you invest that in, and we're paying you, Bob, on a fixed rate of return. So it's a debt. So it's like you're the bank. Mm-hmm. You're literally playing the bank. The your funds are collateralized by the property or the business or the portfolio. And so it's similar to real estate, whether it's in a situation like what Bridger's doing, where it's actually the fund itself, he's actually then, you know, lending that money out to individuals. But it's actually something tangible. It's something, you know, that's collateralized. It's something that's, whereas, you know, in the public market, you know, as you, I'm sure, receive the same thing from individuals who are in the public market. They feel hopeless. They feel helpless. They feel scared. They feel when the riding's good, they feel great. When the, you know, when we're in a bear market, you know, they feel bad. And it's this, their emotions follow the, dictate the emotions of the market. And so the difference in the private market is that it's not ran on emotions. And the real estate markets never crashed. The centralized banking system might have given too many loans or something, but real estate didn't crash. Whereas in the stock market, you could actually go to zero on a Hertz, you know, value of a stock, because it's actually the valuation, not on the production, but on the actual emotion. And so, yeah, share with me a little bit about how your fund works.
But they're small. I mean, they're 5 to 10 grand a piece. And we do probably every month, 70 to 80 loans a month, somewhere in there. They're spanned across, they're very diversified across all industries across the United, entire United States. They're small loans. We have them guaranteed and things like that. And our fund, you mentioned a fixed rate. You pay a fixed rate to investors. We do a waterfall structure. And you'll hear this from a lot of funds. What I tell investors, if I was pitching you, Blake, I would say, hey, Blake, you put money into my fund. I don't make any money until you make back at the first 8%. So it's called your pref or preferred rate of return. So first 8% goes to you as the investor. I will take the next 2% as a catch up. It's a catch up to the general partner, the fund manager. So the 9th and 10th percentile come to me. And then what I do in my funds, this isn't for every fund, but my funds do from 10th percentile to the 20th percentile. We split 80-20. So we do an 80-20 split, 80% to you, 20% to me. And then if we get above a 20% IRR, we will split 50-50. So if this year we got a 25% return, first 8% to you, next 2% to me, 80-20 until 20%, and then we go 50-50 until 25% IRR. And that's our waterfall. And that's called carried interest.
And are your guys who you're lending to, is that short term? Is that long?
Yeah, ours are short term. So ours are 4 to 6 weeks long. They're very short.
Very short.
And they just need little gap funding. We found this little teeny niche with these. We have partner companies. We only work with clients that are pre-approved from all of our partner companies. So people can't just knock on my door and ask for money. They got to go through these other routes to find me. But when they need me, it's, you know, I give them 10 grand and for 4 weeks and they pay me back, you know, 11 grand or 12 grand on that money. And, we usually make about 15 to 20% every 6 weeks on our money. We just roll our entire fund every 6 weeks, which is pretty fun.
Love that. Yep. Okay. So big picture is those who are listening, the majority have some kind of money in the market that they're processing through what to do with it. We've talked a little bit about alternative investments. We've mm-hmm. thrown some different ideas around. You know, as you know, for us, we are in tangibles like real estate. So it's a portfolio of investments. It could be in the wedding business and in the wedding industry, which is an amazing cash flowing group of investments. It could be in self storage, could be in corporate housing, could be in something that's very high cash flowing. It could be an intangible, could be in website businesses that have high continuity, produce lots of revenue. Could be in physical businesses that actually hold this, you know, the stand the test of time. Could be a portfolio of HVAC companies or something like that. Let's talk back and forth. For the investor who's like, it makes sense, I get it. Volatile, not volatile, emotional, not emotional, like, I get it.
Yeah.
But I still got some glitches. Alternative. What would you say to the person who's still kind of like on the fence of like doing something that's in this new ecosystem? And before you answer, I'd say, you know, this is the revolution. This is the wealth transfer. This is the moment in time which people can actually stand and actually take a step of faith and step up and do what we call being a Solomon investor, where you can actually own that domain. You can actually step up and be the king that you're created to be, you can actually make money like you are supposed to make money. But if they're stuck on the fence, what would you say to them?
Yeah, a lot of things running through my mind, so we'll step through them. But so with alternative investments in the first place, we mentioned the stock market, the volatility. Most people in their mind have the old quote, well, higher risk, higher return. Lower risk, lower return. That is not always the case. And that's where me fund managers like me and you will say, that's not the case. My funds, I believe, are high return and relatively low risk. And most fund managers will tell you the same, is we have found this little niche for you, the wedding industry, right? We can come in and scoop up these assets. We believe we can, we have expertise to lower our risk and have actually still a pretty decent return. That's called asymmetrical risk. And that's what all fund managers are seeking. Mutual fund managers really aren't seeking that. REIT managers aren't seeking that. I'm talking about alternative investments. I'm talking about people that like my dad's funds, essentially all they do is, in the most basic nutshell, they go buy an apartment complex, a B-class apartment for $30 million. They'll put in $2 million of rehab and they fix it up. They get rents up and they can sell that for $43 million in about 2 years. So they make $9 million. It's a fix and flip, essentially. So they're just doing massive fix and flips. They bought a huge skyscraper in Dallas, Texas, did a big fix and flip, essentially, and they make a huge return on it. And you'd say, well, there's no way you can get that kind of return with that much risk. And they go, well, worst case scenario is we just keep running the property and collect the rents. Or we still get the rents, right? Or we could sell it and take a big chunk there. So that's called, it's searching for alpha, right? We produce alpha. It's asymmetrical risk. And it's not always risk and reward. There's a lot of cases, high return, low risk type of funds out there. A very simple way, I think a lot of maybe just one-time investors could get involved if they wanted to not, maybe they don't want to invest with a fund, but just start investing. One example is you can do hard money loans. These are super simple. For instance, if you needed $1 million from me, okay, for whatever, I don't even care what it is. You need $1 million from me. I'll say, great, I'll give you $1 million, but I need $1.3 million of real estate collateral. And so you put up, you know, a property, you have a cabin in Montana or something, you put it up as collateral and it's $1 million and you're supposed to pay me back in 6 months, $1.1 million. I'm gonna make $100,000 on this deal, okay? If you don't pay me back, I take the collateral, the $1.3 million, and I sell it for $1.1 million. Or let's say the market dipped 20% overnight, I'm still okay, right? That's a way that you can really back your bases and make 10% of your money in 6 months. So that'd be a 20% IRR annualized. That's a simple example of pretty high return and low risk type of offer, because there's no way you really can lose in that situation. So that's my answer. There's a lot of opportunities out there.
Yeah, it's really good. And so the thing that's going through people's mind is, you know, is okay, I get the high reward, low risk. I get the asymmetrical a little bit. Intellectually, I understand it. But guys, what you got to do is call a timeout and cut the emotions, because if you're in the market right now, there's no such thing as asymmetrical. Like,
exactly.
It doesn't have anything tangible at all tied to it. So what most people don't realize is that the publicly traded companies are their own company. And then there's a second shell company called the stock of the company. And the stock of the company, as you know, Bridger, it doesn't produce any revenue. It doesn't have a heartbeat. There's nothing here. And you're not actually investing into the public company. You're investing into the stock of the company. And what you were just explaining at the first of the show is that these are not correlated. And they're more not correlated now than ever. And so, you know, if you're listening, you've got some type of like grit of like, but if, no, you're not only not anywhere close to an asymmetrical return, you're in the highest risk situation. And if your retirement or your wealth or your future is is in the balance, you know, that's where you got to cut the emotions. You got to call a timeout and cut the emotions. And Bridger, you know, we have people all the time that come.
To add that, can I add something there?
Sure, yeah.
You're competing against some of the smartest people in the world that do this full time. They have teams of people with computer screens. They're trading those stocks up and down all day. There's a few famous hedge funds that have done this. That there's one in Chicago. They installed for, I think it was $14 million, their own cable directly from Chicago to New York so that they could be a millisecond faster on their trades than other people. That's the type of people you're competing against with in the public markets. And for an average investor, I have a little bit of money of my personal portfolio in the public markets, but it's all on spider funds. It's very like a very weatherproof portfolio. To be the best stock picker, just chilling on your slippers at home, is a pretty hard thing to do. You're competing against some of the best people on the planet at doing this. For instance, last week, I don't know if a lot of people didn't talk about this, but there was a $14 billion short against Tesla, pushing down on Tesla's stock price from these huge funds, right? You don't know that's going on. You're just sitting in your office like, oh, I'm going to buy some Tesla. You don't know $14 billion is trying to push that down. And then some, whatever happened, Elon got money in and they had to cover their shorts and buy back the next day. And Tesla's stock price jumped to $150. But there are just things. If there's a great book called Reminiscences of a Stock Operator. He talks about in the 1920s, so before the SEC was involved, about how much market manipulation was going on and just things you don't even know about that are happening behind closed doors. These big players will move stocks up and down, and you're competing against them is the basic thing as a personal investor.
That's a great book. The book is so three-dimensional, and for those of you listening to understand, Ray Dalio says, yeah, I got 1,500 employees. The stock market, the public market, is the world's poker tournament. And if you're in it, you're playing at the table with me. And it's a zero-sum game. There will be a winner and there will be a loser. And I'm going to tell you, it's hard for me to win, but I will win. And so I love that story that helps, you know, grab the picture of, you know, why you got to do something now. You've got to activate your wealth. You've got to actually take action. You've got to, if you got money in the market that can actually be moved over, that you can actually roll over into something in the private market, you know, now's the season. This is the time. You don't actually do it after the storm. You do it before the storm. And obviously there's always another storm coming. So now is that time. Bridger, this has been fun. This has been really good.
Oh yeah.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. There's so much more that we could geek out on, and I'd love to do it another time. If there was something that you could share in motivation, anything that you'd like to share in last words, what would those be?
This is something my dad drilled into me since I was little. And he just said, Bridger, there are people that moved into this country from Nigeria, from Korea, from Thailand. They show up here, they can barely speak English. And in 3 to 7 years, they have 2 laundromats and a restaurant, and they're making great money. And he goes, if they can move here with nothing, can't even speak English and do that, you can do a lot more. And he's drilled that in my head forever. And I think there's just so much value in living in such a great country. I love America. I know there's problems. I know there's things we got to fix, but I love America for that reason of a place where you can build your own kingdom, right? And all of you're the Solomon investor, right? For all the last thousands of years, it's been pretty hard to build your own kingdom. You have to be born to the right family or place. Right now, 2020 United States is never a better time to build your own kingdom. It's sitting in front of you. You just have to take the thing. And I always just think of the analogy of getting up to the plate and swinging. Like, I'm going to be in the baseball game. Yeah, I'm going to strike out a few times. I started 7 businesses before I started my fund. And yeah, I struck out on a few. I hit a couple little singles, you know, I'm going to hit some few doubles and maybe one day I'm going to hit one over the fence, but at least I'm at the plate swinging. Most people sit on the sidelines in the peanut gallery. They make fun. They make comments on Instagram, but they're not in the game. And it's very freeing to be in the game and to live like my dad. He just lived a very frugal lifestyle. His monthly expenses, like his entire life, were less than like $1,000 a month. And he did that so that he could keep getting up to plate and swinging, right? He never got the big car, the big house until he really had made it. And I've mentioned my dad's story, but I value that a lot and something he's taught me and shared. And there's so much value of being in the game. And so for some of your listeners that have already made money and are out of the game now, and just want to passively invest, you can still be in the game pretty actively as an investor. And it doesn't take a lot of your time, but it takes some expertise and it's pretty fun, the world we're in.
Yeah. And for those of you who are listening, who are in the public market and you're in your late 50s and 60s, and maybe you've had some hard seasons that your compounding didn't really compound, and you're now thinking like, I don't have a whole lot left and a whole lot of time left. The encouragement, I would piggyback on what Bridger just said, that no, trust me, there's still time. In the private market, you can compound, you can continue to build. And when you're not having to continue losing and making and losing, you can compound that. You got 10, 15 years left of movement. Trust me, you can redeem what the enemy has stolen. There's a whole lot more fruit there than you're expecting. So love that. Love that encouragement, Bridger. If those who are listening, if they want to find you, contact you, what's the best means to do that?
Yeah, our podcast is called Investment Fund Secrets. And they can find me on Instagram, Bridger_Pennington's a good way to find me. Website, investmentfundseekers.com. So we help people launch and scale and start funds. So if you want to start a fund and really actually get going on your own fund, that's what we talk about and teach.
Investmentfundseekers.com. Yep. Very good.
Blake, thank you so much.
You're so welcome, man. Love your story. Love the, you know, the continual parallel synergy in the private market. So excited for you guys who are listening. Follow Bridger. He's got so much going on right now. Some good things, just some good nuggets to be grabbing a hold of. And guys, for you guys who know that today truly is the moment to put your flag in the ground, I want to truly just bless you that there is more abundance for you, that all you've got to do is take action now. There's some activating of your wealth that you can do. And continue following the podcast because there's more coming. This is a Solomon Investor Podcast. See you again soon, guys.
All right, guys, here comes the thanks and the shout outs. We want to thank everyone that leaves reviews and the written reviews on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms. Just know they mean the world to us. If you've taken the 30 to 60 seconds, you know, extra seconds to show love and to give context of why this has been worthwhile for you and why this podcast has helped you, we thank you. We're going to give a couple shout outs of our favorite reviews each podcast. So please give us some love with a 5-star review. And thank you for joining the Solomon Investor Revolution.